This Hawaiian mini vacation is brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. So what does professional office cleaning have to do with relaxing in a tropical paradise? Frankly, nothing. But Maui Bob and the crew want to remind you to be sure to take the time for what's important in this workaday world. Family, friends, and yes, even yourself. And if their professional office cleaning services can help you make that time, give them a call at 221-5868. This Hawaiian mini vacation was brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, 221-5868.
From the historic campus of Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan, where the good, the true, and the beautiful are taught, nurtured, and honored, this is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, bringing the activity and education of the college to listeners across the country.
A couple of the big newspapers will survive. The New York Times will survive. They're very canny. But the rest of the newspapers will collapse because there's no point. And again, we're going to have this atomized society, which effectively is run by the New York Times and the establishment side and Twitter on the rebel side.
This is your host, Scott Bertram. Welcome to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, part of the Hillsdale College Podcast Network. That was Michael Walsh, editor of the new book, Against the Corporate Media, 42 Ways the Press Hates You. We'll tell you who else contributed to that book and discuss in depth a little later on in today's show with Michael. First, we're joined by Dr. Paul Marino. He is William and Bernice Grucock Chair in Constitutional History, Professor of History, and Dean of Social Sciences at Hillsdale College. Dr. Marino, thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
Talking today about the Biden-Harris plan for Supreme Court reform. As they call it, court packing in some ways. We'll discuss all of that along the way. As we start, we take a look back before we look at where we are present. What exactly does the Constitution say about the size, the makeup of the Supreme Court?
Yeah, actually, it's interesting. If you read the text of Article 3 of the Constitution, the judicial article, it says very little that specifies, very little that's constitutionally required. It says that there will be one Supreme Court, and some, maybe, inferior courts if Congress decides to have them. And it mentions the Chief Justice, but it doesn't establish the number. It has absolutely no qualifications to be a judge. You don't have to be a law professor. You don't have to have graduated from Harvard or Yale. So it's almost entirely at the discretion of Congress to decide sort of the size and shape of the judiciary, and even to some degree its jurisdiction. But what Biden and Harris are proposing, and sort of progressives generally, they're approaching it from all the wrong directions. They're trying to get at the court in precisely the ways the Constitution doesn't allow them to.
Talking to Dr. Paul Marino about the Biden-Harris plan for quote-unquote Supreme Court reform, there's a couple of planks in here. The plan that Joe Biden introduced that Kamala Harris has now endorsed includes term limits for Supreme Court justices. There would be a new justice appointed every 2 years. Each justice would spend 18 years in active service, essentially hearing the high-profile cases in front of the Supreme Court. What would this mean for the makeup and the role of the court?
Yeah, justices can already retire. In fact, this is one of the byproducts of the 1937 court-packing battle, where justices can retire rather than resign and be on senior status, where, you know, they're sort of part-time work, don't have to work full-time. So the additional, you know, adding a full-time justice for justices who reach a certain term of years is not, strictly speaking, unconstitutional, but it's just a kind of a subterfuge to pack the court without expanding the number of justices, nine, that are on the active court.
Another plank in the plan would call for a binding code of conduct for Supreme Court justices. How could that affect the independence of the judicial branch? And at least in your perspective, have recent ethics questions been overblown?
Yeah. Article 3 is very clear. It says the judges will hold their offices, you know, during good behavior. And everyone assumes that means life tenure. But you could say that the only way you can get rid of a justice for not behaving, you know, well, or in this case, adhering to these new ethical guidelines, is by impeachment and removal. So the binding nature of it is going to be the hard part. Congress can say whatever it wants. Here's what we expect justices to do. But outside of the very narrow limits of Article 3, there's no way of getting rid of them except impeachment.
Kamala Harris separately went on the record last year saying she would support just essentially a strict court-packing idea, adding seats to the Supreme Court, and then the current president would fill those seats on the Supreme Court. How is that a dangerous idea?
Well, if you look at what Mexico is doing, you know, right now, the proposal to elect all the judges, so that will keep them, you know, sort of in tandem with shifts in popular opinion. That's exactly what the founders didn't want when they established a separate, independent judiciary. They wanted the law to be stable. So I think, you know, this idea of making it easier to reconstitute the court, to pack the court, is a very bad idea.
Dr. Paul Marino with us as we talk about the Biden-Harris plan for Supreme Court reform. How would any of this, all of this, in your mind, affect the impartiality of the judiciary branch and the relationship perhaps between the Supreme Court and lower courts as well?
Yeah, it's another interesting thing about the history of the Supreme Court is in the old days, the court really didn't matter politically. Nobody cared. It was constituted mostly by, you know, partisan loyalty. And yeah, there were no life and death issues like abortion and others today that people cared what the court would rule upon. It's a very recent, really since the 1950s, since the Warren Court. And the court back then was considered, most of its time was taken up in ordinary litigation, mm-hmm. in ordinary lawsuits between people. They didn't limit themselves the way they do now to high profile, you know, political questions. They would have to render hundreds of decisions in the 19th century. And usually they only pick those where the lower courts, the circuit courts of appeal, are, there's some dispute between them. So they have to settle controversies and keep the law uniform. So a court that shifted with the winds of public opinion rather than try to bring some order to the variety of lower federal courts would kind of turn the system on its head.
I want to talk about the mechanisms. You had mentioned near the top that they were going about it the wrong way. So what they proposed, how would any of this become law? Legislation, amendment, executive action, and yeah, not that we want to give them ideas, but what would be the right way to go about something like this?
Yeah, almost none of this could be done by statute, by ordinary legislation. Or if it was, say, enacted by both houses of Congress, a judicial code of ethics, the hard part would be making it enforceable. Probably have to be enforced in court. And the court today is probably not above saying that we're going to police the limits that Congress places upon us. That's why Article 3 says that Congress can control the jurisdiction of the courts. The Supreme Court has a very limited original jurisdiction that the Constitution gives to it, cases about ambassadors and things like that. Otherwise, its jurisdiction is appellate, with such exceptions and under such regulations as Congress may impose. And Congress has almost never done this. Very rare has it been that the Congress has taken certain cases out of the court's jurisdiction. But it could do that. Be an open question of whether the court would say that Congress's attempt to restrict its jurisdiction was unconstitutional. There are certain federal questions, especially, that the Article 3 says those cases shall be mm-hmm. under the judicial power.
How do you think that any of these changes might affect the balance of power among the three branches of government?
The cases, really, so the abortion case has sort of stolen, you know, the limelight in all this. But much more important changes have come up in administrative law, mm-hmm. The repeal of the Chevron doctrine, right. And the regulatory state. People don't care so much about that. And that's why I think this whole issue is going to sort of die down, since the abortion issue hasn't made any difference. There are as many more abortions performed in America since the repeal of Roe versus Wade. And this coming election just may sort of neutralize it as an issue. And then I think the court will be reformed the old-fashioned way. Justice Thomas, I hope he lives forever, but he can't. And the Democrats, if they retain, you know, control of the White House and the Senate, will be able to pack the court the old-fashioned way. That's exactly what happened with FDR. He didn't get any of the new seats that he wanted, but by the end of his third term, he had appointed 7 of the 9 justices on the court.
A final question for Dr. Paul Marino here as we talk about the Biden-Harris plan for Supreme Court reform, quote-unquote. Issue of credibility. We hear from the left, especially, the court's credibility is questioned. We can't trust the court, et cetera, et cetera. Do you think there is a credibility issue with the Supreme Court, or is it more a matter of talking it into existence.
Yeah. I think if you look at the Dred Scott case, it's a very interesting parallel. Our historians often said that after the Dred Scott decision, the court, you know, kind of was lost its reputation, lost public in public opinion, and sort of faded away for a while until it started to exercise more power in the late 19th century. But more scholars said that's not the case at all. Dred Scott was an unpopular decision, and people thought that it was a wrong decision. They didn't blame the court as an institution, and they didn't blame the justices, you know, personally. They just thought that that decision was wrong. So I think the fire that has been concentrated on the Dobbs decision, again, is probably going to pass, and the court's reputation probably won't suffer in the long run.
Dr. Paul Marino is William and Bernice Grucock Chair in Constitutional History, Professor of History, and Dean of Social Sciences at Hillsdale College. Dr. Marino, thanks so much for joining us.
Always glad to be on the show.
Up next, Michael Walsh is with us, editor of the new book, Against the Corporate Media. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Considering the purchase of an e-bike, why not get more bang for your buck? Redding Electric Utilities e-bike program offers $1,000 towards an e-bike and $150 towards a lock and helmet for income-eligible applicants. With gas and car prices on the rise, there's no better time to take advantage of the new cycling connections in Redding. Join the movement to save some green while going green. E-biking means more fun, more trails for your tires, and more smiles per mile. Find out if you qualify at cityofredding.org/rebates.
Looking for work? O2 Employment Services has been working with local job seekers for the past 20 years. If you're tired of uploading your resume and getting no response, it's time to let O2 help you find that perfect position. Oh, and by the way, you pay absolutely nothing for our service. If you'd like our help, head on over to our website at o2es.com, click apply now, and complete our online application. We have connections with over 600 local businesses. Once we have your information and understand what you're looking for, we can introduce you to all the positions you may wish to consider. We currently have over 100 available positions, and we would love to match you with the one you're looking for. O2 Employment Services, the North State's leading staffing agency. Give us a call at 530-223-4674. That's 530-223-4674. Or visit us online at o2es.com.
Invest in your future with a degree or certificate from Shasta College. Get job ready or transfer eligible in programs like nursing, forestry, teaching, accounting, physical therapy assistant, computer information systems, and many others. Classes are free for full-time students with flexible hours and compressed 8-week options. Perfect for working adults. Ask about the many financial aid options available to help you turn your calling into a career. Spring semester begins January 13th. Enroll at ShastaCollege.edu.
At Cornerstone Community Bank, you're more than just a customer. You're our friends, neighbors, the local businesses where we shop, and the restaurants where we dine. Your success strengthens our community. Come meet our amazing teams in Redding, Red Bluff, and our newest location in Anderson, and find out why we are more than banking. Cornerstone Community Bank, member FDIC and equal housing lender.
Join me for the first Thursday of every month at 6 p.m. for my show, North State Now. In this one-hour show, we cover what's happening in the music scene, theater, food, and arts. We get in-depth interviews with local business owners, musicians, actors, and authors. Listen in, tune in, call in, participate. Win tickets to concerts and theater productions. It's a lot of fun, and believe me, it keeps us going. Join me, your host, Linda Bott, for North State Now, the first Thursday, right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. Also streaming at KCNR1460.com.
The Ramsey Show.
You actually can help people, and you don't help them by giving them a government program. You help them by showing them the way out. People love me enough to put their arm around me and show me a different way. I didn't figure it all out in my own head. So there's a power to hope. That's not some kind of false panacea positive thinking way. It works.
You can't positive think your way into everything, but you can't negative think your way into anything.
Listen weekdays at noon on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, your talk radio station.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. Be sure to check out the Hillsdale College Podcast Network at podcast.hillsdale.edu. Click the subscribe button there to sign up to receive new episodes of this show, as well as The Larry Arnn Show, Imprimis, and the Online Courses Podcast. We're joined now by Michael Walsh, journalist, author, and screenwriter. You've seen his work in novels, nonfiction, and more. His new book is Against the Corporate Media, 42 Ways the Press Hates You. He's the editor, also wrote the introduction and a number of great essays throughout Against the Corporate Media. Michael, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Scott. Thank you for having me on.
Before we talk a bit about your introduction and the themes, give our listeners an idea about who also has contributed to Against the Corporate Media and what they'll see when they pick it up.
Well, the idea was to follow a previous book we did a couple years ago called Against the Great Reset. And under this new model of publishing, I've been supported by private donors. I've had the budget to go out and ask writers I either know and admired, or I didn't know and admired anyway, but writers I admire, to join their group efforts. So Against the Great Reset was against Klaus Schwab and the New World Order and all of that nonsense. And for our second attempt at this, we expanded our horizons a bit, taking the sheer appalling awfulness of the contemporary mainstream media or corporate media. And we have 40 other writers, as myself, who contributed to this volume. And, you know, I'll just run up with some names at random here. Andrew Plavin, who everybody he knows from his screenplays and detective stories and thrillers, et cetera, and his work on his podcast. Peter Berkowitz, who's a prominent scholar, resident in Washington, D.C., Charlie Kirk, John Gabriel, you get the idea. It's sort of an all-star team. And I was very pleased that everybody joined in, and I edited all of the pieces. And then I put them in some sort of rational sequence, and now we're out.
Your introduction piece, which begins Against the Corporate Media, is titled A Higher Loyalty, and you begin by sketching out these corporate media journalists who not only reject objectivity as a goal, but celebrate the death of objectivity in their work and turn to a higher loyalty. How do you define that?
Well, for many years, the left has been saying that they believe in these kind of quasi-religious notions of teleology, which means that all human evolution and, in fact, the entire universe is heading in some forward and better way than the past. So it's a concept popularized among Christians by Teilhard de Chardin. It's quite common in the old Soviet notion of the new Soviet man, how they were going to replace the old happy man with the new Soviet man, which itself was modeled on the Aryan Superman, which Hitler developed in response to misreading of Nietzsche, etc. And it goes back all the way to Rousseau, posits that man is born free and is everywhere in chains. So the very first sentence, Rousseau's book was a lie, but they don't care because lying is what they do best. So I think that's the problem with the higher loyalty is they will obey the laws up to a point. They'll change them when they can, and then they'll flout them because they have a higher loyalty. It's what James Comey, that disgrace of an FBI director, I believe called his book A Higher Loyalty, because he felt that he could transgress the law in order to save the law, burning the village to the ground in order to save the village. And that's what's meant by a higher loyalty. Journalists feel now that the objectivity is out. That only lasted about, as I point out in the introduction, about 75 years anyway. But it's a good thing that it's out. Or, you know, the left. First of all, it's not happening. But if it was happening, it's a good thing.
Right.
So we're at the, it's a good thing now, part of the program. And I felt, as someone who started in journalism in 1972, young reporter, and was inculcated with the then goal of objectivity, I felt it was really important to bring attention back to how far we've flipped. And you could point to the moment it happened, which was a piece in the New York Times, of course, by Jim Rutenberg, saying that Trump was not a regular candidate and that he did not deserve any kind of two sides to every story focus fairness, and that he had to be held to a completely different standard.
Mm-hmm.
So once that cat was out of the bag, it never got back in the bag, obviously.
Michael Walsh is with us, editor of the new book, Against the Corporate Media, 42 Ways the Press Hates You. You made a point in the intro I had not considered, but now makes a lot of sense. The vanishing newsroom. Not only are newsrooms shrinking in size, but the actual physical location where news reporters and journalists used to congregate also is vanishing. Everyone is working remotely. The socializing is gone. The sense of a moral function and a mission is gone. What do we lose in journalism with the vanishing newsroom?
Yeah, it's not just journalism, Scott, either. It's everything. T-Think, for example, which got bogus, speaking of bogosity, the COVID hoax, complete irresponsible behavior on the part of everybody in the United States, turn their back on the First Amendment. It's everything we do. It's also true in Hollywood, which is a place I've been working over the past 20 years. You need collegiality and you need physical presence. The goal of the left is to atomize their opponents so that what journalism is now is a guy sitting in front of a computer. That's it. When I started, and we also have an essay that we borrowed with permission from Lance Morrow's book, The Noise of Typewriters. Yes. Lance is 10 years older than me and goes back even further. But there was a kind of chaotic collegiality in the newsroom. Like, it'd be like trying to play football with 11 guys, but they're playing on 11 different fields all by themselves. There's no halftime locker room talk. Where would Al Pacino be if football was played in 11 different fields? The sense that you're in this together, that you're a shared enterprise, that you're close to your bosses. And I also think that it's a feminized world that we live in now, which allows people to work basically independently.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the rude of the newsroom back in those days, you know, there was no time for please and thank you. That's for sure. There was mostly, you know, do it or get fired. And I think that really helped make news gathering business, as scurrilous as it often was, made it into a vital force in America. Now it's the shell of its former self. The old crews have pretty much been pensioned out or off or died off.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a lot of kids who literally suffer from anomie. They have no idea what their place in the world is. So just by reading Twitter all day long, they think somehow they're entitled to an opinion about the news. Someone else gets the news. But the way the news is coming, the people second-handed now, filtered through some 20-year-olds, very tenuous grasp of the reality of the world.
Michael, hold on right there. We'll come back and talk more about Against the Corporate Media, 42 Ways the Press Hates You. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Reading Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history. It is with great honor and pride that we have been able to support several amazing local businesses like these over the years.
Thanks to the Reading Rancheria for their support of the Kiwanis Basket Dam Club Food for Kids program. We send 185 bags of food home every Friday. They're instrumental in helping us.
Reading Rancheria, proud to play our part.
Considering the purchase of an e-bike? Why not get more bang for your buck? Reading Electric Utilities e-bike program offers $1,000 towards an e-bike and $150 towards a lock and helmet for income-eligible applicants. With gas and car prices on the rise, there's no better time to take advantage of the new cycling connections in Reading. Join the movement to save some green while going green. E-biking means more fun, more trails for your tires, and more smiles per mile. Find out if you qualify at cityofreading.org/rebates.
At Stifel Nicolaus, I am committed to offering investors personalized investment guidance. Stifel is a full-service organization with departments staffed with professionals that specialize in a wide range of investment opportunities. We strive to give each account, regardless of size, careful individual attention. This is Financial Advisor Susan Eastman at 530-244-7199. Let's talk today about a personalized plan. Again, that number, 530-244-7199.
Memory Lane Antiques, Vintage, and Collectibles in the Shasta Gateway Center on Highway 273 in Anderson has distinct treasures to choose from, including vinyl records, DVDs, antique jewelry, such as brooches and rings, necklaces and bracelets. Memory Lane Antiques, Vintage, and Collectibles also offers vintage clothing and accessories, such as retro dresses and scarves, jackets and hats, along with vintage furniture, tablecloths and silverware, cookware and glassware. And don't forget, antiques, including military memorabilia, camping and mining equipment, men's jewelry such as crosses and rings, sports memorabilia, and collectibles. Memory Lane Antiques, Vintage, and Collectibles in the Shasta Gateway Center on Highway 273 in Anderson. Open Monday 10 to 6, closed Tuesday and Wednesday. Open Thursday through Saturday from 10 to 6, and Sunday noon to 5. Memory Lane Antiques, Vintage, and Collectibles in the Shasta Gateway Center on Highway 273 in Anderson.
If you're tired of artificial intelligence and dishonest news, tune in to Poke the Hornet's Nest every other Sunday at 8 a.m.
Join Nick Gardner and Doug Janke, two hosts who were educated at School of Hard Knocks. Get a layman's view of local government as well as our take on national and world events.
If you're woke, go back to bed. You won't like us. We believe there's a difference between a man and a woman, and I think you probably know what it is.
Tune in to Poke the Hornet's Nest every other Sunday, 8 a.m. here on KCNR1460.com, 96.5 FM, and 1460 AM.
Join Aaron Ryan and Bill Cundiff for We the People Radio every Sunday from noon until 2. Our expert guests will give you the whole story rather than a bunch of sound bites. Our commercial-free archives are always available at wethepeopleradio.us.
Sponsored in part by Pape Machinery, located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard, for all your local John Deere Ag and Turf products. Join us every Sunday from noon until 2, wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them?
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Reading Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history.
Thank you, Reading Rancheria, for supporting Tree of Life International Charter School. Gracias por todo su apoyo.
Thank you, Reading Rancheria!
The Shasta Lake Chamber of Commerce wants to thank the Reading Rancheria. They have sponsored our Friday night in the park for more than 18 years, and we really appreciate it.
Reading Rancheria, proud to play our part.
We're back on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. We've been talking with Michael Walsh, veteran journalist and editor of the new book, Against the Corporate Media, 42 Ways the Press Hates You. Michael, there was a thought that with newsrooms changing, journalists changing, that the Internet would be there to save us, to give voice to those who were not working in those newsrooms, give voice to alternative media sources. And there are good people doing great work in places. But you argue the Internet has become the voice of the powerful. How did that happen? How did we allow that to happen?
Boy, well, someone to talk about that is Lynn Reynolds, who also contributed an essay, this book, in our final section, which is called The Rise and Fall of the Internet. And just before I get to that, I have to mention the essay by Priscilla Turner in a section on women and sexuality, How Women Change Journalism. It's an excellent, excellent book at how, as newsrooms began being more diverse, first of all for women and then people of color, et cetera. And so the notion that the institution won't change no matter if the membership does, it was proven to be completely false. Our final section is on the rise and fall of the Internet. So I asked Glenn Reynolds, who's the blog father and still manages to get instant pundit out every day of the week, Hannah Giles, who is a protege of mine when I was with Breitbart. Mm-hmm. And they kind of trace the optimism that attended the birth of the Internet. I happen to have been there, Bert, because Andrew Breitbart, after meeting me at a party in Los Angeles, said that he wanted to hire me to start, became big journalist and Breitbart's big sites.
Right.
And we had a tremendous impact earlier. But I think as the Internet gets bigger and bigger and bigger, sort of like the expanding Big Bang universe, it became harder to reach that mass audience. And now nobody has that mass audience that a link on Drudge will immediately crater a site, whatever's linked to. And I think now we're back sort of shouting at the sky in many respects.
Michael Walsh, Against the Corporate Media, is the book 42 Ways the Press Hates You. Toward the end of the introduction, a great summation of, I think, where we are today. Today's media is not so much informational as a kind of institutional opposition research bureau, forever ready to hunt down and punish heresy. That's the way that so many people feel. It is not a matter of information, grabbing stories, telling facts, but sitting back, waiting for someone to be in opposition to the current narrative, in opposition to what the media and Democrats want, and then attacking, and then seizing on those particular people, those particular stories. How is that a sustainable business model for journalism?
Well, it's no more sustainable than Hollywood's new model of not caring about the quality of scripts, not caring about who's in the movie, unless he or she or it checks the correct boxes. The whole notion that when people say, why are there no movie stars? And the answer is very simple. There are no movie stars because there are no good movies. And it takes a great script, a great part, to turn somebody overnight, as we've seen every famous movie star, into a movie star. And the same is true now for journalism. A couple of the big newspapers will survive. The New York Times will survive. They're very canny. And they also still have some quality and integrity of report, although they've been permeated by wokeism top bottom. So you have to be careful. You have to pass over the obligatory shot against conservatives, Trump, right wingers, you name it. They're in the food pages, they're in the sports pages, they're in all the pages. But the rest of the newspapers will collapse because there's no point. And again, we're going to have this atomized society, which effectively is run by the New York Times on the establishment side and Twitter on the rebel side. And as you see with Elon Musk's problems in Brazil, Brazilian government under a rogue court justice and their former leader who's back in office again, they're pursuing a heavy fascistic policy. So the word for it is fascism. And unfortunately, on the right, we've allowed ourselves tagged with the notion that being conservative is to be fascist. And then you get to the reductio ad Hitler, and everything that conservatives stand for is so would Hitler. Well, that's not true. And what you're seeing now is this recrudescent fascism, which As long as the media people are taken care of on some level, their egos are stroked, or they're financed, or they take bribes under the table, or the Chinese buy them, or the Arabs buy them, they'll be fine because they don't care. And so it's really a moral rot that has set in, and the press has a responsibility, and given that protection in the First Amendment, not to fall into that trap.
I want to ask about the subtitle, 42 Ways the Press Hates You. Does the press really hate us? Do they even think about us? Or is it that they love power, they love access, they love influence? Is there a difference between those two?
Well, I think the answer is definitely the former. Because most journalists hate being journalists. they like the fact that they get to meet famous people and talk to them. And so that gives them a kind of shared, rubbed off glamour. I don't think they're in it for the money because the money isn't that good. It never was. Journalism. But deep down inside, most journalists would really rather be screenwriters. And the original screenwriters were, in fact, newspapers because they learned how to write fast and coherently. They didn't have to tell a story, and they could do it in 20 minutes. Boom, it was done. And famously, Charlie MacArthur, or one of the screenwriters who got out to Hollywood, cabled back to one of his friends in Chicago and said, you've got to come out here because the money is fabulous and the competition are schmucks. So a lot of newsmen made their way out there. But too many of them are just kind of star chasers, and they like to see themselves on television. They like to see their bylines. They like to think they're somebody, but they're nobody because they haven't made it outside of that world. By those of us who have made it outside of that world are very glad we're no longer in that world, and we were never in it to meet famous people in the first place. I was very lucky that I was hired right out of the Eastman School of Music, of all places.
Right.
And they turned me into a police reporter, and literally overnight, because I had to do the job and or lose it. And then I worked my way up to San Francisco, and then finally Time Magazine came calling, and then Hollywood came calling, and publishers came calling, and so I have journalism to thank for that. But I never confused myself with what my job was and never thought that I was the important whom you're writing about. That's the important. Getting those facts right, that's the important thing. It's not a good world.
Yeah.
I'm glad I'm out of it. We'll be off the planet myself soon enough. So. But I did see it.
Yes. Michael Walsh, I'd never ask you to do this, to pick a favorite essay from Against the Corporate Media. So I will tell our listeners, I very much enjoyed John Gabriel's essay on journalists, heroes in their own minds. Mark Hemingway's great one, Checking the Fact Checkers. And I do think I'm legally, contractually obligated to say that I loved John J. Miller's essay on partisan media, seeing as though he is technically my boss here at Hillsdale College. So John J. Miller's essay, fabulous, fantastic. All the others are good too. Against the Corporate Media is the new book, 42 Ways the Press Hates You, edited by and forward by, introduction by Michael Walsh. Michael, thank you so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Up next, Elizabeth Edwards Spaulding is with us. She's chairman of the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation, also on campus to receive an award from Hillsdale's Alumni Association. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Hey friends, RC here with Tobacco and Brew, bringing you this month's Cigar of the Humidor, Padron 60th Anniversary. My new personal favorite, starting with an exclusive Perfecto shape, handcrafted by one master roller using only the finest tobaccos from Nicaragua. After 60 years of excellence, this cigar is Padron's masterpiece. Get yours today at Tobacco and Brew, Redding, California.
Hi, it's Mark from Haven Humane Society. Are you looking to add to your family? We have puppies, kittens, small critters, and farm animals. Each year we have thousands of amazing animals looking for homes come into our lives, and we hope to have them join yours. Follow us on social media and find our links on our website at havenhumane.org. Watch our weekly content on YouTube, like our Mark's Monday mashup, when we talk about what's going on and introduce you to our team and adoptable animals. Get involved. Volunteer. Thank you for all your continued support. Together, we are moving closer to our ultimate goal of a North State with no more homeless pets.
Alan Gordon, Coach Master Collision. She had minor damage to her rear bumper. I wrote her an estimate. Later, I received a call. The lady responsible for the damage wanted to pay for the repairs out of pocket. Her insurance agent told her a claim would raise her rates for years. With our experience in the claim process, I explained to her most insurance companies would forgive a claim if the cost was below a minimum amount. I suggested she contact her insurance agent and have them review her policy. She called back very excited. It appeared her policy did extend forgiveness. they would pay for the repairs and she wouldn't be charged with a claim or have to pay a deductible. The accident would not cost her a thing. She was very pleased. Good thing the vehicle owner came to the right place for repairs. We all pay a lot for insurance. Choosing Coachmaster will ensure you get the most for your money. Let this experience work for you. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
Invest in your future with a degree or certificate from Shasta College. Get job ready or transfer eligible in programs like nursing, forestry, teaching, accounting, physical therapy assistant, computer information systems, and many others. Classes are free for full-time students with flexible hours and compressed 8-week options. Perfect for working adults. Ask about the many financial aid options available to help you turn your calling into a career. Spring semester begins January 13th. Enroll at ShastaCollege.edu.
If you haven't been listening to TV Confidential, this is who you're missing.
Louis Gluton Jr.
Eric Braden.
Samson Williams.
Burt Ward.
Peter Marshall.
Lindsay Wagner.
Loretta Swit.
Michelle Nichols.
Shirley Jones.
Louise Sorrell.
Jen Asner. A lovely and chatting interview.
Conversation,
it wasn't an interview.
Well, thank you. That's what I try to do. I try to make this a conversation.
You made it.
That's TV Confidential.
Saturday morning at 11 on KCNR.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. We invite you to follow us on Facebook or find us on X. We're at Hillsdale Radio. We're joined by Elizabeth Edwards Spaulding, a Hillsdale graduate from the class of 1988. She's currently chair of the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation, founding director of the Victims of Communism Museum, and senior fellow at Pepperdine University School of Public Policy. Elizabeth, thanks so much for joining us.
It's great to be here with you, Scott.
And you are here on campus to receive the Elizabeth Smith Friedman Award for Freedom from the Alumni Association here at Hillsdale. Congratulations on
that. Thank you very much. It's an honor.
Your resume speaks to your commitment to that. What drew you to a career that ended, or not ended, but has resulted thus far at the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation and at the museum?
Yes. Well, I'm a lifelong academic, and a lot of that started at Hillsdale College. And I think that I knew in my teaching I wanted to do things inside as well as outside the classroom, but for a long time I thought it would be just the conventional way of being a professor. A lot of things in the academy changed in even before COVID, and so I was in the midst of changing what I was doing. Still was going to be teaching, but leaving a place I had been for almost 20 years. And at the same time, I had come on the board of the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation. And it's a nonprofit I've known about forever. I was there at the beginning when it was created. I believe in it. And so I became more and more involved, first as a regular trustee, then as secretary, then as vice chairman, now as chairman. And along the way, we needed to make this museum, and we didn't have enough resources. And it turned out that so much of what I've been studying, teaching, researching, and writing about, speaking about for over 25 years now, lined up perfectly with the work of the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation. So that's really the short way there. There's a lot more along the way, but
last time we talked with you on the show was just after the museum had opened. So it's been a couple of years now.
Yes.
What do you try to teach at the Victims of Communism Museum, and what kind of difference do you think it's making?
Well, to answer the second part first, it's making a difference. It's been great to see many thousands of people come through the doors of all different generations from all around the world, especially when we get to see school groups come through, whether it's middle school, high school, college students, even grad students. That's been tremendous. Just yesterday, in fact, I spoke to 50-some interns that were from the Heritage Foundation, and then I spoke to another group that was 8 interns from VOC itself, the summer interns. So that sort of, you know, I'm giving you a sense of the large and the small. But then the big difference it's really making is that so many people never learned or forgotten about communism, and that it's the deadliest ideology that we've ever faced in human history. So many people don't understand the evils and crimes of communism, and that it created victims from the get-go. so much of our focus is on 1917 to the present.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't mean Marx gets off the hook, because Lenin takes everything from Marx and then puts it on steroids, but it's all Marxism there. That's why we call it Marxism-Leninism.
Mm-hmm.
And so people don't know, and we want people, so we're an organization that's about memory and remembrance. Don't forget about those that have already been killed or otherwise victimized by communism, but also the fact that there are still more than 1.5 billion people living under communism in five countries around the world, and some other countries that are now pretty much communist, like Venezuela, even though initially they voted for it. Concerns about what's going on in the United States and other liberal democracies. And so we're actually more needed than ever, not only for the very important historic piece and memory piece, but also for the current piece. And we're making an impact. A lot of people have been learning about communism, and again, as I say, the evils and crimes of it, and learning that as communism made victims right from the start, people also resisted it right mm-hmm. from the start. So we're always about the for freedom part, as well as the communism is bad part.
You have an essay in a recent National Review issue. It's also online at nationalreview.com. Solzhenitsyn and the Life of Truth, What the Gulag Archipelago Still Teaches Us 50 Years Later. This is right in conjunction with the work at the Victims of Communism Museum. What do we learn about freedom by reading a book like this again?
That's right. That's right. Well, many people, of course, never read it. So first of all, everybody should read it at least once in their life. It's one of those kinds of books, and we can say that to a Hillsdale audience, right? But we learn so much about freedom, because communism is the ideology that completely annihilates, completely negates freedom. It says that it will bring perfect freedom, a liberation, but instead it delivers all sorts of horrible things. I mean, it's, you know, to talk about slavery, tyranny, repression, oppression, all the different ways in which it's done, the tools of communism. That's what communism does. So it's completely against freedom, and it's against freedom properly understood, too. I mean, it's not, you know, it's against the narrow understanding of freedom as well as the fullest understanding of freedom, like we would study at a place here. And so I think that by reading Solzhenitsyn and what you get in the Gulag Archipelago is so much of a message of hope about how you still are striving for freedom even when you're in the midst of being completely repressed. And in that essay, I especially highlighted how Solzhenitsyn develops this theme about how the entire country becomes enveloped
mm-hmm.
in the Gulag Archipelago, that the regime cannot get away from what it is set up in this totalitarian set of camps, and that it is not, you know, it's not even stopped until Boris Yeltsin, the first post-communist president of Russia, and now there are prisoners again in the Gulag under the Putin regime. So by seeing the absence of freedom, You see, though, that people who were imprisoned in the Gulag wanted freedom. They were striving for it. And
mm-hmm.
so I think that that's something that, especially in our comfortable Western countries, people need to know. And it's a sobering, shattering read. It really is.
Elizabeth Edward Spaulding is with us, 1988 graduate from Hillsdale College on campus again to receive the Elizabeth Smith Friedman Award for Freedom from the Alumni Association here on campus. What do you think you learned here at Hillsdale that helped you in your academic career and has helped you really be a centering force for the Victims of Communism Foundation and Museum?
I've been thinking about this because of the award, and I'm so very honored to be the recipient of the Elizabeth Smith Friedman Award. We have a one-letter difference in our spelling, but we share this wonderful name. So, first of all, I'm very touched that way. But I learned a lot of things at Hillsdale that I use every day. And so much of it goes back to the professors that I had, the classes that I took. And I think that I was the combination of things I studied. So I was a politics major, French and history minors, and then the content of those and other classes, including English classes, but philosophy classes, all sorts of things, all of them came together, and in the 1980s, that kind of curriculum, against the backdrop of the Cold War, being a Reagan kid, all of that reinforcing each other, the small classes at Hillsdale, the personal attention from the professors. I was constantly eating lunch or sitting in long office hours, sometimes with other friends, sometimes just a professor taking the time. And for me, coming here was a great support because I had gone to a high school that was very liberal. So yeah. For me, it was thrilling to come to Hillsdale and to find my people. And so many of them ended up being my teachers. Plenty of them were friends and peers, but so many of them ended up being teachers. They have helped me understand not only freedom, properly understood, authentic freedom, but also they helped me understand why I was put here to teach and to teach about freedom, to teach about truth and freedom.
Elizabeth Edwards Spaulding, class of 1988 here at Hillsdale College on campus to receive the Elizabeth Smith Friedman Award for Freedom from the Alumni Association. She's also chair of the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation and founding director of the Victims of Communism Museum. You can find more at victimsofcommunism.org. Elizabeth, thanks so much for joining us, and once again, congratulations on the award.
It's been a pleasure to be with you. Thanks so much, Scott.
That will wrap up this edition of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Our thanks to Dr. Paul Moreno from Hillsdale's History Department, also Michael Walsh's new book, Against the Corporate Media, and Elizabeth Edwards Spaulding. The Radio Free Hillsdale Hour is recorded at the studios of WRFH, the student-run radio station at Hillsdale College. Remember, you can hear new episodes every week on this station. You also can find extended versions of some of our interviews or listen anytime to the podcast. Find it at podcast.hillsdale.edu or wherever you get your audio. Until next week, I'm Scott Bertram, and this has been the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Reading Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history. It is with great honor and pride that we have been able to support several amazing local businesses like these over the years.
Thanks to the Reading Rancheria for their support of the Kiwanis Festa Dam Club Food for Kids program. We send 185 bags of food home every Friday. They're instrumental in helping us.
Reading Rancheria, proud to play our part.
Indulge in an unforgettable evening at Turtle Bay's Chocolate After Dark. Join us on Friday, February 7th from 6 to 8 p.m. and enjoy delicious chocolate treats, fine local wines, and a fun night out at Turtle Bay Museum. Perfect for date night or a special treat for you and your friends. This 21 and older event is too sweet to miss and sure to sell out. Chocolate After Dark at Turtle Bay Museum, Friday, February 7th. Buy tickets online at turtlebay.org.
Ready to turn your dreams into reality? At Simpson University, we offer a private Christian education that enriches your academic journey with faith and purpose. Whether you're pursuing your undergraduate degree, completing your degree, or advancing through graduate studies, our dynamic programs, personalized mentorship, and vibrant community are here to support you. Discover how Simpson University can help you achieve your goals and grow spiritually. Visit simpsonu.edu today to learn more. Simpson University, where your potential is limitless.
Hey friends, RC here with Tobacco and Brew, bringing you this month's Cigar of the Humidor. Padron, 60th anniversary. My new personal favorite, starting with an exclusive Perfecto shape. Handcrafted by one master roller, using only the finest tobaccos from Nicaragua. After 60 years of excellence, this cigar is Padron's masterpiece. Get yours today at Tobacco and Brew, Redding, California.
I'm celebrating local heroes. Tune in the second Thursday each month at 6.05 p.m. right after the news for Heroes of the North State on North State Now. I'm Michelle Slade. During North State Now, we will speak with your neighbors, friends, family, and community members who give back, not to be recognized, but because it's the right thing to do. During these conversations, we will learn what truly makes our community and the people in it. Join me the second Thursday of each month at 6.05 p.m., right after the news, for Heroes of the North State on North State Now.
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Redding Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history.
Thank you, Redding Rancheria, for supporting Tree of Life International Charter School. Gracias por todo su apoyo.
Thank you, Redding Rancheria!
The Shasta Lake Chamber of Commerce wants to thank the Redding Rancheria. They have sponsored our Friday night in the park for more than 18 years, and we really appreciate it.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Redding by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.